Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. It's primary day in South Carolina, where former President Donald Trump leads in the polls over the state's former governor, Nikki Haley. Trump's drawing attention for comments he made last night at the Black Conservative Federation Gala in Columbia.
Black people are so much on my side now because they see what's happening to me happens to them. Does that make sense?
Earlier in the day, he said he supports IVF after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that embryos are people, which led state healthcare systems to pause IVF treatments. Many Western officials are in Ukraine today, marking 2 years since Russia invaded. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's repeating his calls for the House to authorize more U.S. aid to Ukraine. Celebrity investor Warren Buffett told shareholders of his Berkshire Hathaway conglomerate not to listen to Wall Street pundits, advising people to be more patient in the markets. This is ABC News. Pope Francis canceled his planned audiences today. The Vatican says the 87-year-old has, quote, a light flu. A South Carolina man's been convicted of killing a black transgender woman in the nation's first federal hate crime trial based on gender identity. Daquan Ritter faces life in prison for the 2019 murder of Dime Doe. Major League Baseball spring training games begin this weekend. There'll be a lot of eyes on what the players are wearing.
Major League Baseball is trying to go with lighter performance uniforms, but with the switch first unveiled at the All-Star Game last year, there's a problem. In spring training, players have quickly noticed the pants are see-through, and some players say the new jerseys look amateur, the numbers look weird, and the whole thing fits strangely, and supply chain problems have players joking they're just going to go to Dick's Sporting Goods and buy their own pants that are not see-through. MLB says adjustments are being made to size, waist, inseam, and fit. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Brian Clark, ABC News.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Todd Almaz Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Almaz Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. People with student loan debt have a chance to get their payments lowered or even have their balances forgiven altogether. But as Alex Gonzalez reports, people with older loans in particular will have to act quickly.
The U.S. Department of Education will be conducting a one-time payment count adjustment this coming summer. Cora Hume is an attorney with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and says borrowers who have non-federally held loans must consolidate them into a direct consolidation loan with the Department of Education by April 30th to reap the potential benefits.
Older borrowers are less likely to hold direct loans, which would already benefit from this pay count adjustment. And then those that do own direct loans, they're less likely to participate in this IDR program that caps their monthly payments based on family size and income.
Hume says the Department of Education will give borrowers credit through its income-driven repayment program for repayment periods from July 1, 1994. 32% of older borrowers are struggling to pay their bills, which is why she encourages folks to call 1-800-433-3243 or visit studentaid.gov/loan-consolidation to find out if they're eligible for the significant adjustment. Hume says nationally there are 1.1 million older borrowers that are not in the direct loan program and hold an average debt of $29,500 in student debt.
The three loans that must be consolidated to receive this payment count adjustment is the commercially managed federally family education loans, the health and education assistance loans, and Perkins loans. Another loan that sort of is a quasi need for consolidation are Parent PLUS loans.
Hume says the upcoming deadline has the potential to change lives and suggests taking action sooner rather than later. I'm Alex Gonzalez. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, low 40s. For tonight, partly cloudy. It'll be breezy today and tonight. For your Sunday, mostly sunny with a high around 52. Downright warm with highs in the mid-60s for your Monday. Winds will gust to around 40 miles per hour out of the south.
Right now, it's 22.
The talk that matters to you and fits your lifestyle.
Tune out all the yelling and screaming.
Come soaring with Eagle 1490.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome to this, our second hour of our Saturday morning broadcast, Saturday, February 24th, 2024. My name is Jim Santel, and along with my wonderful producer, Calvin, I'm here in the studios of WAUK in downtown Waukesha. Also taking your phone calls this morning at 844-967-2789. Delighted to have you with me again this morning as we talk about great numbers of things having to do with America and the aspiration for justice that all of us had here in the state of Wisconsin, throughout our nation, and indeed throughout our world. Right before the break, we took a good phone call from Rico. Rico calling in connection with our discussion this morning about firearms, specifically this finding earlier this month that Jennifer Crumbly, the mother of Ethan Crumbly, who has already pled guilty to 24 counts of first-degree murder in this horrific event in Michigan, found guilty herself for involuntary manslaughter, four counts, one for each student that her son killed in Michigan's deadly school shooting. Also talking yesterday about this verdict coming out of New York, finding that the NRA and indeed Wayne LaPierre, its former leader, responsible for a huge amount of misconduct and corruption, specifically in the area of financial integrity and the lack of it. Rico asking about Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse, this case that we all recall well here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation. Kyle Rittenhouse, of course, all this stemming from his killing two men and wounding another with an assault weapon during the civil unrest that happened in Kenosha following that 2020 police shooting of Jacob Blake. Lots of things to discuss here, lots of things to unpack here related to the possession of the weapon, the acquisition of it, where his parents were, those kinds of things. But along the way, Rico asking how it is that Rittenhouse, at the time a juvenile, not at 18 years old, 17, was responsible for responding to the charges against him in an adult court. And indeed, his lawyer, during the course of the closing argument, said my client was 17 years old. His actions should be charged and should be judged as a 17-year-old. Well, the narrow answer, although not the complete answer, certainly is that Wisconsin is one of about three states, including Georgia, Texas, perhaps others out there, where the law does require that the justice system, our court system, treat 17-year-olds as adults. And a lot of disagreement about that, lots of legislation introduced to increase that again to the 18. Obviously, we know that many, many things attend to one when you achieve that age of 18. This is not one of them. And so Kyle Rittenhouse charged and brought into the adult court facing those charges there in Kenosha. Lots of other issues, obviously, related to Kyle Rittenhouse that we will not be addressing this morning, but can, in fact, a review down the road when we continue, as we always do, to address this larger issue related to firearms in America and their impact, the deaths that are caused by firearms when the First Amendment permits you to express your views and to articulate those publicly. The Supreme Court now saying the Second Amendment permits you not only to carry and use in your own home a weapon, but also now to go out into the public. That's the Bruin case from just last year or so. finding that you do have a constitutional right to carry a weapon in public, again, subject to some regulations around the edges, but not completely. Lots and lots of firearms-related issues to discuss, not only in the wake of the Kyle Rittenhouse prosecution, but all of these other matters and the Supreme Court case coming up for oral argument just this coming week. We are going to turn now to another matter, also much in the public attention just this past week. It comes out of the Alabama Supreme Court. You have seen the headlines. You've read the news about all of this as well. A new front in the legal debate about when human life begins. The Supreme Court there in Alabama says that embryos created and stored in a medical facility have to be considered under the Constitution of the state's laws governing harmful death as children. The ruling that happened just this past week obviously refocuses attention on issues of privacy rights, reproductive rights. We know well that in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs, an opinion written by Sam Alito, a lot of focus now upon what's going on in state courts, including Alabama, huge amount having to do with what the legislatures around our nation are doing, and indeed referendums as well in many states as well, determining what, in fact, the scope of the Second Amendment rights are. The Supreme Court in Bruin saying that in order to justify all these kinds of things, that privacy rights no longer are implicit in the Constitution, and that they are matters for disposition by other courts, presumably including Alabama. Now, this is not specifically in Alabama an abortion rights case, but it certainly has tendrils and connections directly back and forth to it, undeniably coming in the wake of the Dobbs decision, finding once again that with respect to reproductive rights, privacy rights under the Constitution, no longer there. The decision in Roe versus Wade way back in 1973, no longer the law of this land. So what did the ruling say? Well, the ruling itself, somewhat narrow, applies to three couples who sued the Center for Reproductive Medicine. That's a fertility clinic in Mobile, Alabama, for inadvertently destroying their embryos. The plaintiffs in that case arguing that they were entitled to punitive damages under an 1872 law, in Alabama, called the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act. Two lower state courts had disagreed with the notion that that covers embryos. And they said that embryos were, in fact, neither people nor children. Those are the lower court decisions coming out of Alabama. Gets to the state Supreme Court. They reversed these rulings just this past week, saying that the embryos fall squarely within the Alabama definition of minors, and the negligence lawsuits brought by these plaintiffs could proceed. This is not now a determination that the plaintiffs are entitled to judgment in their favor, but simply that they have reached the threshold, they've gone beyond the threshold to enable them to litigate this further in the state district court. On Wednesday, of course, as you know as well, lots of clinics, including the IVF, the clinic at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, announced that because of this, because of the finding that now embryos are people and children who are presumably subject to statutory protection, arguably constitutional protection as well, the IVF clinic at the University of Alabama announced it's pausing fertility treatments to explore the implications of the court's ruling. Many other clinics also doing the same. The significance of that is, of course, that no one knows exactly how broadly this will pass in the nation in Alabama. But freezing embryos, we know, is a fairly widespread practice, and lots of things having to do with standard cycle of in vitro fertilization, hormones, and sperm injected into them with the goal of creating viable embryos for implantation. The process itself, much on the docket of the Supreme Court and of lower courts as well, if the laws now prevent providers in Alabama from freezing embryos, patients may face the medically challenging and, frankly, the financially draining prospect of many more of these cycles of working with the embryos and working with the sperm implantation, all those kinds of things. And an awful lot of people say that it will disproportionately affect lower-income people, people of color, people in the LGBT community. The ruling may therefore also restrict ways that reproductive medicine is practiced in Alabama. And again, all right away, it may in fact criminalize or set a very high civil penalty for for standard procedures that many of the doctors there do every day. And that's the reason why doctors and clinics around Alabama are now pulling back and no longer offering these services and determining that maybe the decision by the Alabama Supreme Court prohibits them from engaging this practice at all. Now, the question, of course, is when we think about reproductive rights and reproductive options here, the question, will this go back to the Supreme Court? We know that under the Constitution, yes, there's a mechanism for a highest court in the state of any state to have its decision appealed and reviewed, arguably, by the Supreme Court if it decides to grant certiorari. Unlikely this will happen in this case. Probably a kind of a narrow option for that, principally because the case hinges on the state Supreme Court's interpretation of a state statute. Again, very much related, plainly, to what the Supreme Court said in Dobbs in the past. But nonetheless, a focus on the state Supreme Court and its determination about what the state statute says. The state Supreme Court, again, directed the parties to go back to the lower court to litigate this case, including the suggestion that other legal avenues be explored. The Supreme Court decision, obviously, seeking to establish in many of its language as well some directives, some mechanisms for addressing this issue generally. The Supreme Court holding that the text of the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act is clear, applies to all preborn children, including, again, the plaintiff's embryonic preborn children. The legal status of embryo as human persons now in the part of our national debate. Along the way, in addition to this finding by the Alabama Supreme Court, having these implications for not only privacy rights, but the very identification of when life begins, what is a human being, what does that mean in terms of how we understand life, and how the law will respond to that. All those things now back on the table. They've never left. Along the way, you have the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court also writing what's called a concurrence. And along the way, the Supreme Court Chief Justice Tom Parker cites verses from the Bible and Christian theologians in this concurring opinion. Again, he agrees with the result in this case, but he says this. He says, human life cannot be wrongfully destroyed without incurring the wrath of a holy God who views the destruction of his image as an affront to himself, as an affront to himself. The concurring opinion, of course, doesn't carry the force of law. This is a concurrence. It's not the judgment in and of itself. But the language that Chief Judge Parker used is significant. He argued in his opinion that the court was merely enforcing the Alabama state constitution, which, according to all the reporting there, amended in 2018, to recognize the sanctity of unborn life. And so he makes reference to that. He also says that the principle has deep roots that reach back to the creation of man in the image of God. He quotes the book of Genesis. And he sprinkles his opinion with a litany of religious sources. Those include Christian theologians, Thomas Aquinas, John Calvin, and others, including the prophet Jeremiah. All of that, a part of the discussion now going forward, coming out of this major decision, coming out of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama just this past week. We will be discussing that again as the Supreme Court itself, the federal Supreme Court, addresses these issues down the road as well. The debate about privacy rights, about embryos, about when life begins legislatively in our courts and in our public discourse continues in our nation. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
The Todd Alma Show.
Green Bay's a fine town, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get from parking tickets, and we say that the Packers are going to donate that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for Mayor of Green Bay.
The Todd Alma Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwabba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is the talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
We are back here in our Saturday morning broadcast. We are also especially honored today to have my friends and colleagues in Cable, Wisconsin, in that part of the nation, our nation, and also our state in Hayward. They're at the Birkebeiner Cross Country Ski Race. And yes, there is a connection, as we've always said, between the Birkebeiner, historically, this event we described at the start of our first hour, a number of minutes, moments ago, involving Prince and then King Haakon, this amazing historical event where the members of the Royal Guard, if you will, ensured that the young prince was scurried away from the rival tribe and lived to survive, and focusing upon their commitment to their government and the possibility of the rule of law coming forward. And indeed, we also know here's the other connection with this sporting event happening right now in Cable and Hayward, and that is that King Haakon from Prince Haakon goes on and he becomes one of the most significant kings in Norway's history. He consolidates his position in 1240. He's obviously an adult at this time. And yes, he focuses on the supremacy of the kingship, but also identifies along the way the things that a leader should do in terms of establishing the rule of law in his country. He initiated, Prince, then King Haakon, a number of legal reforms, which were crucial, really very important for the development of justice in Norway as we know it to this day. His new law, as it was called, written about 1260, a breakthrough, according to all historians, for both the idea and the practice of public justice, this notion that you're accountable to the community and should, in fact, be viewed through the community and through the public light, as opposed to traditional concepts that occurred in Norway and many other countries, virtually all countries probably, having to do with feuds and revenge, and that's kind of violence as a way of promoting some sense, imperfect, incomplete, and just downright wrong justice. The influence of the reforms that the judges there under King Haakon established could not be overstated. He writes something called the King's Mirror. It's an educational text. It was intended for his son Magnus, and it codifies many of these legal reforms that he put into place when he was the king of Norway that last in many ways to this day into 2024. And I dare say, my friends in Cable, that the tradition of King Haakon continues right now where you are in our state, where we have got not only the capacity under our rule of law, under our system of justice, but also to enjoy life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And that's what's going on right now in Cable, in Hayward. I'm delighted to be joined once again by my colleagues here in Civic Media, Greg Gunderson and Greg Griesel. Greg and Gray, thanks for being with me once again.
Thank you so much for having us, Jim. Happy to be here broadcasting on behalf of WBZA, the Civic Media Network. And I agree. I can't imagine that Skjervald and Torstein had a recreational skiing event in mind as the eventuality when they rescued the would-be King Haakon. But it is perhaps the perfect expression of what they had hoped for. Of course, they couldn't have imagined he would be codifying a whole system of being as much of a philosopher as a king, talking about what rule meant rather than just doing it the way that so many kings and perhaps failures of kings did. He actually thought about the job. Like I said, perhaps a recreational skiing event wasn't what they had in mind, but I think it serves as an excellent expression of exactly what they were hoping for when they made that desperate flight to save that prince.
Absolutely. And so we think all the time about the ways in which we build on history, right? Right, even right here in Wisconsin. I know as well, and Gray, perhaps you can talk to this somewhat as well, that it was based upon that history, that initial saving of the young prince and, again, his work to establish the rule of law there in Norway. That was the inspiration many years ago. I think it was back in the 1970s for the creation of our Birkebeiner here in the state of Wisconsin.
Indeed.
Go ahead and tell me more about that.
Well, it would have been roughly 1974. There have been pauses, I believe. I might be off by about a year or two on that, but of course, this being the 50th, the math works out quite well. Like like Skjervald and Torstein, they had a rather tangible and definitive reason to be skiing the way they skied, right, across the mountains, the snowy mountains of Norway in birch bark leggings. Honestly, as I sit here and think about it, and you take in the area and the type of people, both myself and Greg are from this area near Cable, perhaps, but the type of people who occupy these areas and the type of people who would gather for something like a ski event, frankly, it's the kind of place that any reason to express that sort of camaraderie, togetherness, that sense of community, you look for any excuse you can possibly find to engage in that sort of event and engage in that sort of togetherness. So something as a flight through that sort of forest and this sort of forest that we have here, the fact that it was at all possible to recreate that sort of event is more than enough reason to gather around such a small area with so many people and triple, quadruple, even more than that, the population of the area, just to enjoy that people agree that it's worth celebrating.
Absolutely.
That gatherings of people, especially in your life, are usually for only the best and the worst of reasons. So something as celebratable, if you will, as this event, it makes a great reason for a town like this, small as it may be, to explode and to become such a positive place to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of that, again, we celebrate, we revel in the sportsmanship. Yes, we revel in the history, you and I, and I think all of our listeners do as well. But there is an economic consequence, right? I believe that both Hayward and Cable, wonderful places, beautiful parts of our state, both under regularly 1,000 people in population, right? Even I think Cable is perhaps even smaller than that. Now we've got descended on this wonderful area, as you said before, you and Greg said before, the people from around the world, not just around their nation coming in. It has a
certainly
dramatic
so.
Economic impact as well, correct?
And one could assume that anytime you see a participant on the track, there's likely between one and as many as four support personnel, you know, not necessarily holding water bottles and everybody's not bringing their trainer, but children, these are a lot of normal area residents. So when you see one person, that speaks to the presence of two to maybe even five people or more in the Hayward area. And of course, this makes it the single most important economic event in the cycle of the year, especially in a year like this when there's been no snowmobiling economy to speak of, which snowmobiling economy is really half the months, and for the non-snowy months, it's the ATVs and UTVs. So this event has come at a perfect time. I'm kind of sad to, or a little bit anxious to consider what the economy of the area might have looked like had the Birkebeiner not been possible, which is just another accolade for all of the people who moved and made the snow.
It's definitely a huge, it's a huge on the hotels, all the businesses, and they basically planned for this event months in advance. So if you want to get a motel room up here, you got to call probably around that 6 to 12 months before to get a hotel room up in this area for this event. It's that huge.
To the economic impact specifically, actually, it would be, it's really the make or break. It's actually, Wisconsin just approved applications for disaster relief in counties affected by the weather like we've had this winter because of how drastically affected those economies are by a lack of snow. So that, if anything, is quite indicative of how important it is that snowmobiling and events like the Birkebeiner be possible. We are extraordinarily thankful to all the efforts of everybody involved, the American Birkebeiner Ski Foundation, all of the groomer crew, and everybody else involved. It really, it's impossible for us to know for sure what it would look like without this event, but we're very glad we don't have and what it would have looked like this year without a Birkebeiner.
And plainly, for those folks who are thinking about going up next year, 51st is plainly 2025. And you folks, the two of you, are going to be back again a little bit later in this hour to tell me more about what you're seeing there in Cable and Hayward, this wonderful event. And we'll look forward to that further discussion, my friends. Come back right after this brief break.
On air, 1490 AM, online, lacrosseeagle.com, and on the Civic Media app. This is Eagle 1490.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark.
It's primary day in South Carolina, where former President Donald Trump leads in the polls over the state's former governor, Nikki Haley. Trump's drawing attention for comments he made last night at the Black Conservative Federation gala in Columbia.
Black people are so much on my side now because they see what's happening to me happens to them. Does that make sense?
Earlier in the day, he said he supports IVF after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that embryos are people, which led state healthcare systems to pause IVF treatments. Many Western officials are in Ukraine today, marking 2 years since Russia invaded. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's repeating his calls for the House to authorize more U.S. aid to Ukraine. Celebrity investor Warren Buffett told shareholders of his Berkshire Hathaway conglomerate not to listen to Wall Street pundits, advising people to be more patient in the markets. This is ABC News.
A big win for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After a rough start under new head coach Doc Rivers, the Bucks beat the Timberwolves in Minnesota, 112-107. Giannis with 33 points, Damian Lillard with 21, then went live after the game on ESPN.
A lot of scrutiny about Doc Rivers after the 3-7 start, but this is a very impressive win. From the inside, what has that transition been like?
On the inside, it's been good. I think we understand that. Having our third coach this season, including our interim coach, it's going to take some time, to get adjusted and to kind of reestablish who we want to be and what we want to do on both sides of the ball. And when you're going through that type of transition midseason, you can run up against a team that's just flowing well. You can run up against a team that's just feeling good. A lot of things can happen, and, we just haven't been on the winning side. But I think on the inside, we can feel the tide turning. Just got to do what we do and just keep pushing. That's it.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, low 40s. For tonight, partly cloudy. It'll be breezy today and tonight. For your Sunday, mostly sunny with a high around 52. Downright warm with highs in the mid-60s for your Monday. Winds will gust to around 40 miles per hour out of the south.
It's 24 right now.
Finding the special healthcare resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special healthcare needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions. Get answers. Connect today toll-free 877-947-2929. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
The Todd Alma Show.
You look at Taylor Swift. She fought off the bitterness of defeat when she lost her records, when she was kind of duped by a manager. People who told her she'd never amount to anything. But it doesn't matter if you like her music or not. I'm a fan of anyone. Doesn't matter whether they're an artist or an athlete or just a common Jane or Joe. If you've overcome something in your life, you're a winner. If you've made it through, that's what it's all about.
The Todd Alma Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
It's 2024. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you live across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jane Matt Nair.
And I'm Greg Bach.
Join us Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon as we break down the news and share some laughs along the way.
We're talking to politicians, we're talking to community leaders, and we're talking to anyone who has a story.
And we occasionally get a visit from an umbrella cockatoo. Join us for Matt Nair on Air Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon.
Our dial position is off to the right. Our conversation, right in the middle. You're soaring with Eagle 1490, the talk of La Crosse.
And we are back in our continuing discussion of all things law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining Calvin, all of us here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, including those at WBZH in the Hayward area. We're going to be returning at the end of this hour to my friends and colleagues, Gray and Greg, up at the Birkebeiner for some final thoughts about these connections between justice in America and sporting in America. It is not an attenuated or distant connection. We celebrate life, we celebrate liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the state of Wisconsin and in our nation. We have spoken this morning about a number of very serious issues. We've spoken about firearms in America, this NRA verdict in Manhattan just this past week, the Michigan prosecution. We had a caller about Kyle Rittenhouse. Also talking just before the break about this major Alabama decision. We have not yet fully digested the impact of that, finding that embryos are in fact people, part of the overall position there by those who would advocate those kinds of things. Plainly, definition of life, all important. Significant, of course, that in that Alabama case, a court concluding that conception can in fact take place in the laboratory. The strongest and presumably most immediate of impact of the decision will be on fertility patients, however, trying to get pregnant, not on women seeking to end their pregnancies. So that among the other incongruities, if you will, the consequences of the decision that may or may not be consistent with advocacies that are out there generally. We also know in the wake of that decision of just this past week that the Attorney General of the state of Alabama has said that the Attorney General's office has no intention of prosecuting providers of in vitro fertilization, IVF, or their families who use frozen embryos that are now considered children. That may provide some solace, some comfort to medical clinics and doctors, others out there. But once again, it raises issues that we have not been thinking about before. All of this, again, in the wake of Dobbs, in the wake of our national debate now about what is life, about what privacy rights are all about. The right of women, and I would offer men as well, to control their bodies and to make decisions premised upon the privacy rights that have been a part of this nation, at least since 1973, actually going back way to 1965, arguably even before that in our Constitution. Supreme Court has also been speaking, as you know well, a lot about academics, and that's our third area for major focus this morning. Some significant issues coming out of the decision last year. This case finding that it is no longer legal, it is no longer constitutional for admissions counsels, admission officers to assess race in terms of deciding who's going to be a part of their incoming classes. We know those cases coming out of Harvard and North Carolina. Students for Fair Admissions, the plaintiffs in those cases, but applying again to private universities and colleges and public alike, and changing the atmosphere, the geography of the way in which our education system works. One of the questions, of course, as we are now in the midst of high school students applying for college, what is the impact of that on their applications? This is the first class that is going to be working in the wake of that all-important decision. We predicted that time that although this decision was important, significant, changing more than a quarter century of tradition and practice in our nation, that maybe in the end it would not have a huge, huge impact. But we're still waiting to see what the incoming class of 2024, the class, if you will, of 2028 when they graduate, perhaps beyond, what that will have, what kind of impact that case will have upon them. Certainly some important notes along the way, some anecdotal support for the notion that students and their counselors are appropriately invoking this determination, this statement by the Supreme Court in June of last year, that indeed, while you can't address race overtly, students who are applying can, in fact, submit essays and submit statements that reflect their own experience as people of immutable characteristics, including particular races. And so an awful lot of increasing evidence, anecdotal, that there are students out there taking the Supreme Court at its word, as they should, announcing the law of the land and finding ways in which they will not only present their applications in the strong and affirmative way in which they should be presented, but they will also identify for those officials ways in which we can continue the all-important work of establishing diversity on our college and university campuses. So here's some stories about there. Astrid Delgado, first wrote her college application essay about a death in her family. In the wake of the Supreme Court decision, knowing that, what they said, she reshaped it around a Spanish book that she read as a way to connect to her Dominican heritage. What a great story that is. Duchesne Curley wanted to leave his indigenous background out of his essay for his applications to college, but he reworked it to focus on an heirloom necklace that reminded him, in his account, of his home on the Navajo Reservation. The first draft of Jael Hollingsworth's essay explored her love for chess, appropriate in an essay. The final draft of Ms. Hollingsworth's essay, focusing on the prejudice between her Korean and Black American families and the financial hardships that she overcame. All three of those students, again, anecdotally, finding ways, appropriate ways, legal ways, lawful ways, significant ways to ensure that they have access to our nation's colleges and universities. We know as well, Sophie Desmoulins, who is Guatemalan, lives in Sedona, Arizona, wrote her college essay with the court's ruling specifically in mind. She said her personal statement explored, among other things, how her indigenous features affected her self-esteem. What a great affirmation that is for all of this. And our experience volunteering with the Mayan people helped her build her confidence and embrace her heritage. That's what it's all about in America. Julia Nguyen, a child of Vietnamese immigrants in Biloxi, Mississippi, rewrote her essay, making her more aware of how her family's upbringing shaped her. She said she felt more proud to have this personal statement because of the affirmative action case. And so some anecdotal support there for the notion that while the law has changing the ways in which officers on our college campuses can address things, students wisely, thoughtfully, appropriately, in an affirmation of who they are, and this focus not only upon diversity on our campuses, but the good and wonderful education that they can, in fact, and should get, should not be deprived of them or to anyone based upon immutable characteristics in those applications. We also know just this past week some additional language coming out of Yale this time, following in the tradition of Dartmouth in February, that the admissions officers there had found that hundreds of students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who had solid scores on the SATs and other entrance exams had declined to submit them because they fell far too below some perfect scores. And Dartmouth now going back in the opposite direction. This past week, Yale University will once again require standardized test scores for admission for students applying to enter in the fall of 2025, becoming again the second Ivy League school to abandon the test optional policies that have been widely embraced during COVID and other situations. The Supreme Court decision last year banning this race-conscious admission, many people, experts, predicted that those test optional policies would become even more widespread. In fact, in an unpredictable turn of events, Yale, Dartmouth, other places, recent research questioning whether these test optional policies may actually hurt the very students they were meant to help. Fascinating, fascinating events in the era of academics, all in the wake of the Supreme Court decision of just last June. Presumably more universities and colleges looking into these kinds of experiences that Dartmouth and the officials at Yale are now re-embracing, requiring standardized test scores for admission as a way of ensuring, once again, diversity on our college campuses. Lots of things having to do with academics there as we continue our discussion. Delighted, as always, to have callers calling into our Saturday morning broadcast. Joe, delighted to have you with me once again this morning. Your comment, your question, your observation.
Thank you, Jim. I think a fascinating discussion. I would like to see if you had thoughts at all about the world of legacy admissions, particularly yes. to the highly desirable Ivy League colleges and the number of students there who daddy donated, and so they've got an in. I would also like to hear what your reaction is to colleges, and I've heard of this out of Tulane and Stanford. I suspect it's in other schools where if your mother or father is a professor at that campus, you got an in to Stanford or Tulane. And I know that there are, for example, professors I know from Tulane that are making the decision to stay in in New Orleans, even though things are rocky with climate change there, simply because of what an incredible deal it will be for their sons when their sons are of college age. So would you like to talk a little bit about, you know, when we think about diversity, if your dad donated to the school, why should that give you a leg up? Why don't they just donate out of the goodness of their heart rather than to smooth an entrance for their children? Right. Thanks a lot, Jen.
Absolutely.
I'd be interested in your reactions.
Absolutely. Always appreciate your comments, your observations. And yes, indeed, let's go back to this decision coming out of the Supreme Court just last year that talked in many ways. They invoked the words of Sandra Day O'Connor, who said way back when they reaffirmed the capacity of school officials to incorporate race into considerations. Sandra Day O'Connor had written, well, maybe 25 years from now, we will no longer be in that situation. Maybe there'll be a circumstance in America where we no longer will have to look at race, a concept that the Chief Justice has sometimes rearticulated in the voting rights area. I think many of us, most of us, presumably not all of us, would recognize that race continues to be a significant issue in our nation. And that, yes, indeed, for the purpose of diversity, all those factors should be considered. Why? Again, lots of invocations here. Brown versus Board of Education says what? Says, I am a better student. The atmosphere is better if indeed I'm in a study group with someone who doesn't look like me, whose background is different than mine, whose experience economically, socially, politically is different. All that diversity is very, very good. To your point, Joe, when there is a decision that's premised not upon that melting pot, if you will, which was what America is all about, what our universities and colleges should be all about, but it's premised upon a leg up. That is the legacy admissions. We'll focus on those in particular, that I will get into that university or college because I have a member of my family, a mother, father, aunt, uncle, somebody else out there who's already been there. Maybe this donations issue also very significant. That is not consistent, right, with the notion that we're looking for ultimate diversity. And even the decision by the Supreme Court said we're still committed to that fundamental notion, Brown versus Board of Education. It certainly would seem that if one of the considerations, if whether or not you have a relative who has previously attended, whether that relative may or may not have donated for a library or an extension of a building, that sort of thing, that's not one of the immutable characteristics that promote that Brown versus Board of Education broad sense of community and the kind of thing that we would envision for an academic setting that is raucous and it is testing ideas that are controversial and good and offensive and not offensive, all those kinds of things that an academic institution should be all about. All those kinds of things are promoted when you've got people who are there in the class because of the diversity they bring. I would offer, I think, to your good point, Joe, implicit in your question or comment, that legacy is not one of those immutable characteristics. I don't pretend to know all about how provosts and economic advisors and officials on college campuses deal with all those issues. There may be great pressures to do that, but it certainly is, at least seemingly, superficially, inconsistent with the Supreme Court's decision, even of just last year. Great comment, great question, as we think more about education in America. When we continue with our discussion this morning, we're now going to do a few updates on things we've talked about recently. We know from just this past week, the discussion that we had on the Saturday morning broadcast, that Donald Trump imposed a judgment against him by a Judge Engoron just yesterday, finally entering the formal judgment in the wake of his determination of earlier last week, finding an overall assessment of about $450 million, significantly, a lot of people looking at the economics of that right now. The amount is going up by $87,502 each day until he pays. We talked last week about the bond option. We talked last week about other things. And also the time is significant here. And we also know from just some reporting this past week, the Letitia James, yes, the same Letitia James who prosecuted the NRA case, is also stating just this past week that she may go after his physical assets there in New York, buildings, other properties, as a way of executing on this judgment. We've got more coming up here on our Saturday morning broadcast, including going back to Hayward and Cable for the Birkebeiner. Stay with us for that additional discussion this morning.
When you get Ricky, don't lose that number.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You know, I hope this is the best hour of your life. I'll tell you that. The Cripes cast, folks.
Comedian Mary Mack.
He's noticed a very sizable increase on people off the lake coming onto our lake to fish it. You don't want everything to be popular and known about. That seems to be the way I also approach my comedy, Charlie. I think there's a theme.
Cripes cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to the Talk of LaCrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
It's getting better all the time.
We are back here in our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for joining me and my wonderful producer, Calvin. We're here in Waukesha, but we are broadcasting throughout the state of Wisconsin. And as a special feature of our broadcast this Saturday morning, I'm joined by my two colleagues and friends, Gray and Greg, who are there in Cable. And they're reporting to us and providing us with information about this wonderful Birkebeiner cross-country ski race, the largest cross-country ski race in North America. Greg, glad to have you with me once again for yet another report on the significant things going on there, sporting and also affirming the good things that we do here in America. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I suspect there's a good deal of happiness there in your area this morning and throughout the week.
Yes, indeed. Thanks so much for having us on today, Jim. And I did want to just shout out a special series of thank yous to Advanced Printing of Hayward, River and Rain Wellness Boutique of Hayward, Lakewoods Cafe of Hayward, and Lakeside Property Management Services of Park Falls, making this broadcast possible, allowing us to be here to talk to you today. And an extra special thank you to the Cable Natural History Museum. Use their space as a media broadcasting area today.
And thank you to you, Jim, for letting us come on your show today.
Delighted to have you both here with me. And again, what a tremendous event this is for the state of Wisconsin. Lots of really neat cultural things going on there. We talked already about the diversity of people who are there, all ages, all national origins, races. Skiers from 49 states, the District of Columbia, 20 countries, I believe you told me. And perhaps even more than that. What a great affirmation incredible. Of who we are.
It's incredible that this event is even going on this year. Last year at this time, we had 100 inches of snow on the ground. And this year, as no Mother Nature hasn't been kind to us. They've actually manufactured a beautiful loop track here right in Cable here at the Telmark, right at the trailhead there. That has been just wonderful. And now today's tradition is usually the big ski from the trailhead from Telmark, Cable, Wisconsin, all the way to Hayward, Wisconsin, which is about a 34 miles. But we'll be on the loop track there, and there's still a lot of events going on, isn't that right, Greg?
Throughout the day, yes, indeed. And I mentioned the 2018 American Olympic gold medalist from the 2018 Winter Olympics will be participating today. Jesse Diggins will be on the track, making it look easy here up here in Cable.
So I want to ask the two of you, as you're there throughout the day, I'm jealous. I suspect many of our listeners are as well. You are plainly broadcasting, as you said, from this wonderful facility that's hosting us today. Are you out there? Are you participating in the events yourselves?
Oh, certainly not. there may have been a time in my life when such a thing would have been possible, but I was not interested in that sort of athletics, and I'm not.
I was kind of inspired, but, that was way back in my younger years. I'm in my high 50s now, so I figured, well. But although you see skiers of all ages out there.
Very true.
You see some people that are 75 years old all the way down to probably, 14, 15
younger than
old,
that, even 8 or 9. But suffice to say, while we wouldn't stand out on necessarily confident enough in that fact to test our theories.
Good. And again, never, Greg, never, never, ever too old to be out there sporting, and a very young person you are. And we'll look forward, maybe in 2024, we'll do this again next year. I'm delighted to have you with me on this broadcast. let's make plans to do this again. And I'm going to expect that the two of you will get your equipment there and be out there, maybe doing some live remotes. Calvin, others there will be able to put this together in such a way that we can actually hear you as you're participating. How's that for an aspiration
that
for next year?
That would be a lot
year?
Of fun.
If I've got to put this equipment on and ski with it, I'm going to bring you with me. So you bet we'll be on your show next year if that's happening.
That's great. Gentlemen, any further comments as we conclude your wonderful reporting and coverage there from cable?
I think we've done quite well enough today for what we had planned. I think you've done fantastically to allow us to broadcast to your fantastic listenership about what's happening here in cable and in Hayward, Wisconsin today. I would just ask that anybody who sounds like interested in participating or attending the event, quite frankly, with how much skiing is taking place, if you're within a Civic Media listening range right now, you could probably make your way to Hayward today and get here before the skiing is finished. So if you're curious, make your way on up to Hayward, make a weekend trek of it. It would be a great time for anybody to occur on, or to happen upon the city of Hayward, town of Hayward, this weekend.
These events start at 7 in the morning, go all day, and it's great to see how excited the winners are when they're up on the podium there and announcing the awards and stuff. So a great event. Come on out. They got streamlined parking. They can bus you right up to the site, so it's a great setup, and part of the American Birkebeiner Cutter's Cross Country Ski Race.
There you go. Not too far to travel. I know when I've been up in that part of our wonderful state before, I think it's about 5.5 hours or so from where we are, kind of in southeastern Wisconsin. It is doable. So get up there to see not only Gray and Greg, but all the other wonderful people there, part of the Birkebeiner. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me this morning. Looking forward to being in touch with you before next year at this time, but certainly next year we'll do once again.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's been a pleasure to be here at the Cable Birkebeiner Media Space and on your show this morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Likewise.
Take care, gentlemen. Have a good day. And in our final minutes, again, consistent with our theme this morning of the ways in which we participate in life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness here, we're also going to talk again about a couple more things, just some updates in our remaining minutes here. What's going on in the courts of America? We're still waiting. We're still waiting for the United States Supreme Court to tell us what it's going to do with this application by Donald Trump, presently running for the presidency of the United States of America. He has requested, actually 14 days ago this coming Monday, 2 weeks now, pending before the Supreme Court, his review of the decision that finds that he is not immune from prosecution, decisions made by the lower courts, the D.C. Court of Appeals, the District Court as well. That decision is not a difficult one. My own assessment is that the longer this takes, two things happen. One is it's probably worse news for Donald Trump, because what it means is that there probably is some discussion going on inside the Supreme Court. Maybe they're going to be writing concurrences denying his application, and that's what's going on. But it does take more time. And as we've said previously, every day that passes is a day before Tanya Chutkan can reschedule this matter and get this case tried. Again, the major theme of 2024, timing, tick-tock. And so we're still waiting for that decision. Supreme Court, again, going to be entertaining some oral arguments this coming week, as I said before, on the bump stock issue. Many more cases, 9 more oral arguments coming up in March. Got about 60 cases pending before it right now. And we also know that in the coming week or so, other attention is going to be focused upon the other case, the other federal case. That's the one pending in Florida, being presided over by Judge Eileen Cannon. She's got a couple of things in front of her that are not yet before the Court of Appeals, having to do with the names of witnesses, having to do with secret government filings. She's going to be having a hearing this coming week to determine what is going to be happening there, including a trial date there as well. Next week, we're going to be talking more about some of our international issues that we prefaced today, Brazil, Pakistan, Germany, and yes, indeed, England. Come back next week for that discussion about those international rule of law issues, including as we did today, references to Norway, history, and the aspiration for justice across our planet. Thanks for joining me this morning, everybody.
Is the talk you can't ignore, even if you tried.
Why is everyone ignoring me?
Find out why all of lacrosse is talking about Eagle 1490.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You taught me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you have made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.